On this episode, we have a senior art director that is bringing the beauty back to the web, Marianne Sibille.
Bees in the trees and discontinuing book burnings.
And VR tourism and inner demons. Send them all my way, my friends. I'll give them a good home. Welcome to Thunder Nerds, where we never put baby in the corner. This is JD Wright.
This is Eric Shin.
And this is Frederick Philip von Weiss. This is the Thunder Nerds, a design and developer discussion for all levels of people in the industry that simply love what they do and do web good. Man, nobody
had to go ghost.
Yeah.
It wasn't ghost. I mean, it wasn't ghost. I mean, like we talked about ghost and it made me think about Swayze, and then it was Dirty Dancing all day.
I like the way that you follow that connection with all the way from that to Baby in the Corner.
I was really lucky though that I wasn't famous when Swayze died, because literally that day I was like, is it safe to put Baby in the Corner? Like, if I was a celebrity, ooh, I would have been destroyed that day.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been a good tweet. Mm. I would have cried a little bit and laughed. Let's hey guys, let's intro our special guest today. On this episode, we have a senior art director that is bringing beauty back to the web, Marianne Sibille. Welcome, Marianne.
Hola, ¿cómo están? Drasti, Gaxi, and hello, bueno. How are you?
Very well, yourself?
Yeah, that's in three languages that I'm learning.
Oh, three languages. So English and what else?
Well, my native is Spanish. Hello, everyone. So I speak Spanish. I'm from Venezuela. And the second one is English. I lived many, many years in the States. And now for the last 5 years, I've been living in Bulgaria. And I'm now learning Bulgarian. I can survive a little bit if they speak slow.
Man, I wish I could learn a few languages. That takes a IQ that's probably a little bit above mine. But
well, no, it's easy. It's not hard. I mean, like when I was living in Africa, I picked up Swahili really fast. It's a lot easier when you have immersion.
Yes.
Like when you're in a culture, exactly. Like it's so much easier. Yeah.
Yeah, it is easy when you're forced completely and nothing. It's in a different alphabet because this is Cyrillic and nothing, you don't know anything. So you really get forced to learn. But my only thing is like where I live, which is in Varna. It's a city on the Black Sea. It's a very touristic city. Almost everybody speaks English, so it's a bit hard to learn there. But yes, it's better when you get to if you want to learn French, go to France, 6 months, and you get it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I mean, it picks up pretty fast.
Mm-hmm. You pick it up.
Hey, Marianne, so let's give everybody a quick summary of who you are and what you do.
Okay,
if you can, please.
Oh, yes, I could try. Well, I am a senior art director. I work in the tourism industry. And like I said earlier, I was born in Venezuela. I then started living in the United States because I wanted to be a professional tennis player, which I did for a short period of time. Then I got into college. Then I said, well, what do I do? There's no more tennis. I don't want to be coach. Then I found love in graphic design. And that's what I did. I studied graphic design with a full scholarship in tennis and got out there of the university and right away got a job in one agency, advertising agency. And from there, I started just loving the whole art world, from graphic design, from doing print to web to marketing to even now, of course, there's big things of the UX, but that's what I do. And now I move to Bulgaria with my family, with my husband and my daughter. And I continue working as a senior art director for this company in the United States. So I am a remote. And it's all possible. That I think this is the beauty of graphic design, or not only graphic design, but even web developer or UX designer, that you can actually do your job around the world as long as you have good internet connection. So that's what I do. And yes, I bring beauty back to web.
How did you go from being a professional tennis player, though, to getting into graphic design? Was that always one of those passions that you had, like, in the back of your mind, or like within your heart, that wanted to kind of jump out, or was there some kind of a serendipitous moment that led you down that path?
Well, yeah, I think it was more like the later. When I decided to be a tennis professional tennis player, I focused my whole life for that, well, my whole teenagers years and that. So I never thought I needed to go to university, because I thought I'll make it professional, win Wimbledon, and I'm done. But that didn't work out. So I'm like, ooh, now I need to study something. I always love art, like painting and drawing and doing sculptures, but I never even had a mind of idea of graphic design. So I was thinking, well, I need to go find a job that, you know, I need to find a career in where I can make some money. And then I was thinking, well, my father is an accountant and maybe should do that. And then my father laughed at me because you're terrible at math. I'm like, oh, thank you.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for the support.
Way to be supportive.
I know. And then I was thinking, I like architecture too. But then I was like, then my father again, like, yeah, but you need math in that one too. And then I was kind of debating, well, I also need to find a scholarship where there's a career that I like as well as there is tennis, because I needed to get my school pay. And with one of my classes in college and community college, I first went there. Yeah, it was serendipitous. Like you said, Fred, my teacher was all about humanities, and then he says, this is the last class for the season, for the semester, so you need to come up with a paper what you're going to be your career. And then, and I'm like, I have no clue. Well, he said, well, there you go. What do you like? I said, well, I like art. And I'm like, well, start looking and do a research, a document, a paper about it. And somehow I end up with graphic design, and I start reading and reading and reading, and I fell in love with it. And I did my document, my paper in that. I make an A. And then I said, okay, I need now quickly find, I have less than 3 months to find a college that have a scholarship in tennis and it has a graphic design major. And I found one and I love it from that moment in. So it's good. That's how I got in there, in graphic design. Yep. If not, I'll be a very lousy accountant.
So do you,
I think most accountants are lousy, but
it's true. Sometimes
the rare few.
I know. Well, they keep our bills kind of on track sometimes, but yes,
sometimes.
Yeah. So yeah,
hey, it's not worse than being an investor, you know. We're just going to put your money in this, and it's gone.
Do you still dabble in tennis a little bit?
Yes, I do, actually. I continue. Tennis is a sport, kind of like golf. It's a sport for life. I mean, you never stop. Of course, I don't play like I used to every day, 7 hours a day, which I just do maybe once a week or twice a week. Here in Bulgaria, the tennis setup is quite different than in the United States. So I actually have to pay a coach to play with me, which I don't need a coach. But anyway, he makes me run. But so, yes, I continue playing.
Yeah, that's one of those things, I guess, like you said, it's like a lifetime kind of thing that you do. Like, people play golf all their life, you know, or they run all their life. Yeah, it's good to have some kind of physical activity that you could kind of align yourself with, identify with a little bit, and keep you healthy.
Yeah, and it's also, and to be honest with you, when I go on the tennis court, it's a relief hitting that ball. All the stress you have or anything, if it's work or family or just not sleeping, lack of sleep because your daughter doesn't want to sleep at night, then you go to the court, you're maybe a little bit tired, but just the moment you hit, it just feels great, like energy comes back.
Oh, dude, no, I get that. Whenever I go to the gym and I'm pushing up weights, I'm like fighting off demons from when I was like 11 in Jersey, so I understand. I'm just trying to fight old ghosts.
You're still fighting the ghost? Oh my.
I figured out why I don't work out. I invite the demons in, so just send them this way. Just point them in my direction, and we'll be good.
We'll do, sir.
I'll give them a good home.
I'll give them a redirect.
I'll be their bad influence.
It should be a splash page, just warning.
So you said, Marianne, that you bring beauty back to the web. Tell us about that. How are you bringing beauty back to the web? Or not bringing it back to the web. Sorry, I'm on that Trump roll. How are you bringing beauty to the web?
To the web. Oh, my. Well, how I bring it is, you know, I know it's not just doing a pretty design or with pretty fonts or pretty colors or maybe organizing content better, but I think what I was trying to say there is that using UX, trying to organize content better, not only because the last couple of years I've been working a lot in the tourism industry and it's trying to sell the destination. And I can create an environment like on the website or in print, how to make it pretend someone to think, look, this looks like Hawaii. But if the content and the way how everything is organized is not appealing, doesn't matter how beautiful the first front is, if the rest doesn't attract me to go and book, go to Hawaii, for example, and then it's useless what I did. So that's what I'm bringing when I say bringing beauty back to web is a combination of not only the design, but also the way of content, what content creation comes in, like how I'm going to entice that visitor to go to this destination, as well as the UX, like how everything's organized, what I'm looking for. And that's what I've been trying to do the last couple of years where I work.
Yeah, it's important, I think, to have a mixture of your own heart, intuition, passion, and metrics, and put those things together, and not let one thing kind of take over the other, but have a kind of a cohesive balance. It only behooves you to produce better work. And as an art director, I mean, that's a very special role that brings clarity and definition. They help convey a special message to a particular group of people and invoking culture and an emotional reaction. So that is that person's main role and definition. And I think the way that you described it was perfect.
Yeah, it's very important, especially in the industry where I'm working. There is a stakeholders that want to know exactly in the end, well, how many people really actually book, you know. So this is very important to know only something pretty, but I need to have metrics. And so that's something that, of course, every client is different. You know that. Some clients like, yeah, I just want something pretty and I don't care if, you know, I don't care if this performs well. Just put, you know, 2 meg picture or 5 meg picture on the homepage. I don't care if, you know, Google, you know, tricks me and says I don't care, you know. So it's depending, of course. That's a little fight you need to go, and but that's what I try to achieve in the work that I do. And of course also that depends on the team that you're working with, if they are also in sync with your same thinking, which sometimes it's not, but hey, that's part of the game.
Well, how do you balance that? Because, you know, obviously we've underlined that you are in Bulgaria. You're in another country very far away. You're sunbathing in the Black Sea daily and playing tennis
right
with
now,
a coach that you do not need. But how do you manage that that organization of remotely being over there? You know, how do you do that from where you are and you're working for a company in the United States?
Well, the first 3 years I was working with clients, and then after that they changed me to a new business, and where the client now is the company that I work with. Because it was a bit tricky, of course, the first 3 years, because normally I have not only do designs and manage the product, but also need to be dealing with the developers and the editors. And then we have to do presentations to clients. And most of the times I was like I'm doing now. I was on the phone, on Skype, and a lot of times we needed to actually be doing presentations in the real place, you know, with a client. And so that was something that it was a bit of a tricky to sell, especially, well, you know me, and of course right now I'm talking, you don't see my face, but I do a lot of emotion in my face and the way how I sell things. So it's more engaging, and maybe I can do all that on the phone, but it's not the same when you are actually on person. So little by little, I was getting accounts that were already, that the client knew me. And then we just were maintaining the product, but anything new I wasn't getting, which I would like to, but I understand, because that was one of the things, one of the downsides from, you know, working remote. But now if the client wants to fly me over, they could, but of course I'm quite far. So it's almost like a 2 days flight. So it's like even useless, you know, but if now that I'm working on the new on a new business development, which is on the marketing side, the client is their own company. So it's easier. It's now I'm on the whole concepting area of creating new business. Every RFP that comes out, we do work, do designs. But this is very quick. I am designing websites every 3 days, brand new. And sometimes there is not much thinking, but because we need to get new business in. So that's now the downside, no downside, but that's where I'm working right now at the moment. But it is hard to balance.
I had a question about, because I'm speculating that Virtu, with the VR tours that are probably going to be coming up with the new Oculus Rift and the new Sony has got a new VR headset that they have coming out. Do you think that's something that you're going to integrate into your packages, like something that you could suggest to your clients? I mean, like, what are your thoughts on that coming up?
We're already incorporating that type of technology to the client when we're proposing. It's just now to see who's going to buy and I'm going to pay. But yes. Yes, we are.
I'm sure there's a lot of UX opportunities within that and a lot of areas that you could be creative when designing some kind of virtual experience, like Jonathan pointed out.
Yes. And I think that tourism industry actually goes very well for this new, technology. And right now, the thing is, most of these clients that we're working with, they're government related. So they have a specific budget and they need to, sometimes they are afraid to go something new because, their job is on the line. But yes, there is a lot of, opportunity to be creative in any way. And what we notice now, it's video. Video is huge in every type of way to sell content, especially on the tourism industry. And I was working with the clients, that's what we were trying to push, but it's hard because there is always a certain limit that they wanted to push the UX. So they're not that advanced. They're maybe a one or two in levels of UX to understanding that. They still don't see much of the value. Some do, but not many.
Yeah, I'd imagine there's so much value in that, and it would be such a huge sell to me. Like, I think that's a great question, yeah. Jonathan, because like if I was somebody and I wanted to visit, I don't know, I'm just going to pull out something like if I was the board in Tennessee and I wanted to get people to visit Tennessee and I had some key areas that I could communicate the value of the experience in traveling there, I would love to have some kind of interactive virtual reality tour to where I could go through and I could see the pyramids of Tennessee and I could see where the
Memphis,
where they have their burial of the seven avatars of Vishnu within the Tennessee basement and the Alamo, all those things.
Yeah. Well, I think too, I mean, like, with you're starting to see some of the bolder companies or some of the companies with a little bit more money actually utilizing this for the ad campaign of like Derek Zoolander 2 that they came out with Zoolander 2. They did this drone, 360 cam experience where you could actually experience the entire world that they were in. It was in a fixed point, but like it was basically a five-way fashion show that you could go 360 degrees and then basically 360 degrees north to south as well and see everything in it. It was really fun. I watched the whole thing like three or four times. I think companies are starting to wise up to it.
Yeah.
But I really think that the travel industry is going to be something that utilizes it.
Yeah, and they are already using it. Again, they're all political. All these CBBs, Conventions Visitors Bureaus, they're all politically. So they need to watch their budget. But some are taking risks. For example, you mentioned Tennessee, Fred, and they are actually very, very risky because they bring a lot of money in tourism, and they're actually one of the clients. But they do have interactive. I don't know if they have 360 videos, but they have a lot of interactive, for example, for the Civil War trails, for example. And they have a lot of information about that. And then I know that a lot of different states, they are partnership with Google Trekking. You know, they hire someone, they come someone from the department or someone that wants to win an award. I mean, maybe it's for example, if you want to go to Tennessee and say, well, you're a Fred, you're a winner to do 1 week in Tennessee and you're going to get in your bag for 1 hour the you know, this tracking Google camera that you're going to do 360 videos and photos of this certain area. And a lot of places, like example, Michigan does that and Hawaii. And it's very cool because you feel like you are in the destination just by doing this, you know, the street view that Google offers. And it's very cool. And that actually already helps you then to make a decision, you know, okay, I want to really go to my vacation, my next vacation there. So yes, it's depending on the client, the destination, and also the budget they have. But they are
and picking budget up. They have.
Huh? Excuse me? The budget?
I said, and the budget they have too. Because you know, yes, I mean, exactly. You can present a ton of amazing, ooh, cool things, and you could also communicate the value and what the return on investment would be. I mean, you could say, yeah, the ROI on this is going to be blah 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 until you run out of air to breathe. And but if they don't have the budget, they don't have the budget.
Yeah, normally they do, and it's kind of amazing how the RFPs on these cases work. But they normally they say, give us your best ideas, and you go out because you want to get the budget. They kind of give you a ballpark of the budget they have, so you're really not sure what it is. And then, yes, if we do very good, we get the business, which is awesome. But then comes the whole contract, and then the budget starts cutting down, and then suddenly you just get a simple website. So, but little by little, yeah. I mean, they are noticing the importance, especially big markets. One of them, for example, right there of us is Clearwater St. Pete. They're doing a very good job on how they're using their market. And we actually did a VR experience maybe 3 years ago with them, and it was very cool how to, still was very early stages, but it was the first CBB who did it, and it was very successful in that woman. A lot of people wanted to copy, but it was, again, comes back to budget.
Yeah, a lot of times it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a standard and a fear for the industry, because I see like people actually like being able to tour their room before they even get into it, and people might be like, nah, that's not what I want. But I think some places will shy away from that who don't have a great product, but people who are really looking to show off their experiences, it's going to be huge to the comfort level of their people coming in. Yeah,
you could probably equate that to when people first started talking about responsive design back in the day, like maybe early 2007 might be pushing it, but maybe like 2009, 2010. Like, well, when people were trying to sell that, some clients, entities, if you will, were more maybe not as receptive to the idea because they didn't see the pain point at first. Obviously, now that's kind of an enforced pain point by Google. Saying that if you don't have something like that, your site doesn't really get to the top of the SERPs. So it could be in the same relevance maybe within the future, because who wouldn't, I mean, want something like that? It seems like a pretty obvious value.
Yeah,
well, I think
no,
a lot of it might have to do with.
I'm sorry.
I agree.
I was just going to say, I think a lot of it might have to do with market penetration. I mean. How fast these things are flying off the shelf. So mobile phones, I mean, you know, you take it wherever you go, but an Oculus Rift, I mean, where is the use case in it? Is it at the home? Is it, are you commuting with it? That type of thing.
Well, like the VR experience. Well, the VR experience, I mean, they've done it. I mean, if you go back years ago, they started doing it in, realtors started doing it, then they quickly abandoned it because it was work. But like that you had to go in and actually shoot every like VR tour of the home that you were selling, and they'd put it up on their website. Then they all just started using the MLS and just actually driving out and going to see it. So, I mean, like, it's something that's going to be pretty big. We'll see what happens, to your speculation, which is genuine and honest, what happens. But when you've got Sony with, getting close to 50 million units out there, and, you know, the adaptation point of them is generally pretty big. Oculus, I mean, these are showstoppers. As long as they do it right, it's going to be big. They are going to be in homes, and it's like, maybe. You never know. Our generation is the generation that is buying retail, real estate and going on trips and starting to use our money. So, they've got to start pandering to us sometime, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And I think also that the young generation, they like all this technology. And one thing that they do like, I know, is to feel the experience, especially if we go back to the tourism. And yes, this virtual reality gives you that experience. But also what it does, what I'm noticing more and more in, not companies, but tourism boards that are doing a successful job, is the ones that always have a contest where young people want to participate to do certain things for a month or two and then kind of record the whole trip that they have. They could be, it could be maybe orchestrated by the, you know, by the organization, or it could be something that then the person who won the contest, you know, wants to do certain things in this destination. And then they record everything from the moment of not only the person starting the tour, the vacation with their cameras and everything, but then also themselves, like their own cameras with their own GoPro cameras with their own. And then they're doing also the tweeting and the Facebooking and Instagramming or WhatsApp or whatever. And then you are actually, and then you, of course, connected to that, you need to have a great marketing campaign that then you have all these followers following these people, because it's very interesting. And the young people, they like to see that, because then after seeing maybe a couple of days of how this person is interacting in this destination, you are sold. But it takes time, organization, to create that type of product. And one that I know, I was actually checking on them, I wanted to do it, but then the criteria, it wasn't working for me, was I think it was Finland. Visitfinland.com was having 100 days in the Arctic contest. And they did it at the beginning of October last year, and now they just got it, started filming in January, and guess what? It's awesome. The whole, you see the adventures of all these different individuals from different backgrounds, and it's just great. So that's, I think, what more and more people want to do in tourism industry. And I think the companies need to do, you know, get that. It's just, again, back to budget and planning.
Yeah, you know, also too, if you have something like that with a campaign to where you're building an ecosystem with people publishing their own content, you're also kind of building a brand loyalty, because mm-hmm. you have that connection to the people. You also have the benefit of them providing the content, so it's a huge win-win for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. So what kind of things are you doing then on your freelance side? What kind of, besides at your company? I know you have a few different websites that maybe you might want to talk about.
Yes. Well, besides of what I work, I also have a couple of different little projects on the side. I have, first, my big project is my beautiful daughter. To make sure she's a good growing up. That's a big one. And then, of course, my husband. And then I have my own, yes, it's important. Cannot forget that one. And then I have my Purple Creative Agency, which I did it a long time ago. I started, I think it was back in 2007. And it's just another way of doing just any creative work, from logo designs to web, print, that is not necessarily related to tourism. You know, sometimes you want to have more creative freedom and do something else. So that's, I am doing freelance, not that often like I used to, just because of the time. But I still have the Purple Creative. Any branding that anybody needs, I do the branding, and they do any print from cookbooks to kids books to any type of even web design. And one of the things that I started with a friend of mine here was we have this Art Tracer publishing company where we do mainly is publish medical books in Bulgaria. But we in Bulgaria, there's a lot of doctors and a lot of conference and a lot of books that, it's for the medical, not only for the doctors, but as well for the students. And we have this company for a long time ago. My friend had it for a long time. So I just, when I move in here, I jump in into, you know, what other things we can do besides medical. And then we had this idea a long time ago. I had this Silly Goose Travel blog because I love to travel, and I was thinking, well, maybe there is something related with this goose. And we came up with the idea of coming up with a kid's book, a children's book. And of course, at the time I was pregnant, so I was thinking, I think it would be great to have, you know, a kid books that teach you, because there's a lot of, I mean, the market is inundated, I think, you know, with different type of children's book. But some are like, huh? And some are like, okay. And then for me as a designer, I am attracted to the ones that have beautiful design, but then also want to make sure that the content is good, right? And these are things that before I never pay attention. And that's one of the things that now as a mother, I pay attention. So we came up with this Silly Goose Lola, which she is a silly goose traveling around the world. But in this case, you know, which is me, but she doesn't look like me. She has bigger lashes. And what she does is in this first, it was a cool process to create this book because I think, well, it would be easier to do it. But actually it was hard to write it because I'm a designer. Yes, I can write, but I'm, you know, the writer. And you think, well, it's easy. It's for kids, you can do something, but it's not. It's actually, you need to know, there needs to be a lot of repetitions and a lot of things for the kid to learn. And this first adventure, she is learning about pollination, how the pollination happens. So we are very proud of Lola, and that's one of the projects that I have. And we have it in English and in Bulgarian. You can download the book, and we have it in Isu right now, isu.com. And the beauty of this book is that at the end of the book, there is mask that the kids can cut them with the characters, and then they can play themselves like, I am the bee, I am the flower, and I am the bird, and I am the seed, and kind of play themselves again, the whole idea of pollination, of how that happens, because how we have fruits and vegetables is because thanks of bees and the butterflies and all these little critters that little by little they're getting, some of them bees, some of them are getting extinct, and it's very important for us to have, we need them to have food.
Yeah, it's interesting to know a butterfly uses its proboscis to drink because it doesn't eat. Like little cute, yep, things like that I think are fun for kids. And like you said, like having that kind of repetition like helps them learn little songs and stuff like that. That's so cool. We'll definitely have, yep, a link to the book in the show notes. I don't know if you sent me that, but you need to send me that.
Yeah.
Would you like to know why I'm a horrible person? Because the entire time you're thinking about bees pollinating things, the entire time I've watched this video of how bees are starting to pollinate or to pollinate cannabis plants, and now they're coming back and taking the cannabis, and as they're doing it with the dust and other things that comes off that plant or the flower, they're actually making honey, and the honey can actually get you high. So all I can think of is just, you know. No, the character of this book figuring out like the more adult version of this, where they explain pollination. Well, now listen, we need this, like we bees do. Are dying. So maybe, yep, what we
it's
need to
be
do is let's do a book together. Let's do a book together for adults, where we talk about bees pollinating pot plants, because that's what's hot for my generation right now.
It's
and maybe
true.
We can start teaching adults about pollination so that they don't die before they get old enough to actually, it'll be a historical document by the time they're old enough. Let's do an adult book.
Oh,
I'm
need
on
this
it.
Fucking honey. That sounds
I'm
so
on
good.
It. Thanks. I'm on it. I'll be the designer. I'm for it because it's true. I mean, people don't understand. They think that the fruits comes just like that. They don't. You know, these little critters are the ones who are making this. And I know I read an article a while back that in China they're so, you know, polluted that now they are just using people to do pollination. But I mean, really, it's just.
Well, they don't. Well, yep. The thing is like, huh? They don't want to. Like, we don't care about fruits and vegetables,
nope,
because why would you buy why would you buy an 80-cent apple when you can get 8 packs of ramen noodles, like, for the
exactly.
same, like, one apple? Like, that's the thing they don't care about. But they care about their drugs. They care about their drugs. And if bees are starting to control, like, this new strain of, like,
they
honey
do.
Pot or something like that, like, they're going to care about that. We could save bees with weed. Let's
it's
do it.
It's true. It's true. This weed, just, I'm telling you, it's a power of everything. But you're right. You're right. Here, for example, in Bulgaria, for example, there is so many, we we were driving today to Sofia, and there was so many honeybees. I don't know how you call that, farms or whatever. And the honeys are amazing, because sometimes there is honey of lavender, or some are from this other white tree, and every flavor is different. So yeah, the bee, wherever they go, then when they come up, their honey is the flavor, and it's just delicious. So yes, I agree with you. I'm on it, on that book. We need to teach the adults about it.
No worries, we got it.
Yeah, it could be Lola Goes Rogue. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, exactly. 50 Shades of Lola. yeah, right after Yeti lunch, exactly. No, I can multitask. Okay. I can write. I've got the easy job.
Maybe that's part of the Yeti's lunch. You know,
pollinated. Oh, huh? He gets a hipster. Huh? He gets a hipster. Nice. He attacks the hipster, and then he gets the weed honey, and then he doesn't care anymore, and everything's just real chill, and he's hanging with the Sherpas, not killing him. Yeah, no, I think it's a good idea. I like the idea that I think that it's a good book. It's a noble cause. Buy this book and just give it to adults, though. Don't give it to children. Just give it to adults and let them run around and play bees and flowers.
Yeah. Well, and back to my Silly Goose Lola, which is a more PG, a more, what, the little one? Uh-huh. This is that's the one that we had out, but we're thinking then going to like teach them the metamorphosis one, like for example, like the frog or the, so I don't know if that's also for adults. We can do something around those, but that's the next book idea we have. And then eventually traveling around, that will be her tricks. So we have a couple of books in the plans to work on it. So those are the things I do on the side.
Speaking of your daughter, how, and me as a new parent, I could see where, how this affects time. How does being a mother now affect your work and your learning? Like, how do you balance, and I think a lot of us, being parents or new parents have a difficult time trying to find time to, learn new things and do work on the side or practice, our disciplines on the side. Like, what do you find your directive of that being now as a mom?
Well, it was hard in the beginning, but I think with the time and also when the kid keeps growing, it's just organize your time and set priorities. In the beginning, it was quite hard for me to arrange that, because I used to be, you know, able to work so many things at the same time, super multitasking. And I notice now that I am not that multitasking anymore. So I'm thinking, oh man, I'm kind of going down here. I'm getting old. But it's not just that. It's just you have so many things now extra in your mind, you know, in your hard drive, besides of just work. You have the kid. And I think you maybe noticed that too with you. I don't know. But, and then also, so that's one thing that I noticed was tricky. And it's taking me a little bit now more to be able to be creative. But what I do is try to find the time, for example, sports. To play tennis is what really helps me. Then I have always some time off for myself, like if it is go out for an hour for a coffee, or go for example, even on my Bulgarian class, I go for a Bulgarian class, and it's an hour and a half, but I take almost 2.5 hours just for me for a break. And that really helps me organize and relax my time. And another thing I do is, which I did a course back in May of last year about, you know, redefining myself, because I was getting a bit confused, but a little bit lost with so many things I was doing, but at the same time trying to be productive. And it's really, in the end, was just you need to organize, write down things. And I think that's maybe what it helps me the most. Like, I write things in the morning, like just things that I need to do. Doesn't matter whatever it is, whatever comes in my mind, 3 pages. I make small pages, because I started first with large, big pages, and it was forever. So I started just very tiny, small pages. But that's a little trick that I read, and it helped me to, you know, get all the things out that I need, and then have the time, and then focus and go back to what I needed to work in of work. And now also what is helping, and you'll notice that when your boy starts growing then and going to school, is just when he goes to school, it really is a big help. Like Andrea now started to go to daycare, and I have the mornings now to, you know, relax and enjoy and discover, you know, try to learn new things, read a book.
It's important for them to have their time too. You know, just like you know, it's not like it's a selfish thing or whatnot. It's also good for them to get out and see other kids and socialize and pick up those those kinds of skills.
Yeah, in the beginning it was a bit.
What's that?
That was a joke from earlier. But no, I think I would probably, knowing me, I'd probably try and meld the two somehow, you know? It's like, okay, Johnny, this is how we name our Photoshop layers.
Well, trust me, I've been to my daughter now thinks that she really wants to work like me now. She tells me, I need to work like mommy. And I'm like, oh my, you're 3 years old. I don't want you to work like me. But she already wants to, she sits down to the in my desk and she exactly makes the hand motion like she's typing. And she gets pissed off that because she cannot type properly. And she knows already her letters, the A and N and D. And then she say go one by one. And yes, you're right. You maybe want to blend it together. But the truth is when you start doing that, then actually they just want to play. And then, can you put YouTube on, mommy? And then your time is gone. Yeah, so you can try.
But yeah, it's hard. Like if you're trying to, it's hard to go. Like if you're down a rabbit hole of thought where you're trying to develop something, and then you know you have that break, and then I don't know about you guys, but for me, it always takes me at least like 20 minutes to a half hour or more to get back into a kind of train of thought and follow that path and really start chugging along in my work. So it's difficult.
Yeah, the same. Even
without that, because that's why multitasking just doesn't work.
Yeah, it's the same for me. I think actually, and I'm an owl, so I actually work better. Like from, I start, like I said, I'm 7 hours ahead of Eastern time. So I start work at 4 o'clock my time, and then I continue working until midnight. I think that's what it kills me a little bit. But the truth is my productive time is between 10 to 12 or even 11 to 1 to 2 in the morning. And it's not now, it's been even before. So I think it's dependent, but you just need to figure out when you sleep, you know, so you need to organize your time well. But it's possible.
Like you said, it's all about planning. Where do you find the where do you find the inspiration for what you're doing? Like who are you looking at? What kind of websites are you looking at? Like where do you find that flame to the fire or to the bundle of wood? Shit analogy. That's the that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. But where do you find your inspiration?
Well, to be honest, one of the inspirations that I love is when I travel, and I try to do at least every 2 months, do a quick trip to whatever, if it's inside Bulgaria or out, which we are close to pretty big cities, so like, you know, it's an hour and a half to go to Vienna, then an hour to go to Istanbul, an hour and a half to Prague. So if I can do a quick little vacation, that gives me a lot of inspiration. And then the other things when I do online for me to look is, I love a lot this website, the awards.com website, and it's just for me to see different websites. And I am in the tourism industry, but I don't look much at tourism industry. I look a lot of different websites or articles about retail and even news. The big, you know, Bloomberg.com website, they have, and it's not just because of content, but it's because they have so much content, the way how they organize things, that's what I look for. And also a lot of videos. If it's video of graphic designs or videos of even just personal inspiration or just personal strength, even though I'm designing something, if I just listen to something like that, then suddenly, I don't know, something clicks and then I have, you know, what I was looking for. And sometimes inspiration just comes looking at gossip magazines. to clear my head, just to see some.
You know, I kind of remember that you liked gossip magazines a while ago. Yeah. enlighten everyone that listening, that Marianne, myself, and Jonathan all used to work together at the same place.
Yep. Oh yeah.
Yep.
Now I understand. Now I understand why you were down here. You were down here for IMG, right? For Bolotary Academy.
Yes. I was a part. Okay. Not completely there, but yes, I was some. And then another one's in Miami, an academy in Miami.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, it's you know, it's where we are in Sarasota. There's a very famous tennis school, Bjorn Borg, Andre Agassi, all of those, if you're a tennis fan, came from the, Martina Navratilova. I mean, almost everybody has kind of come through here or played here.
And live there.
That's a, it's a big, they a big there. Draw. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it's a big draw into the city. But yeah, we did. We used to work for the same company down here, and I think the friendships forged were the best thing that came out of that place.
Yes, yes, and I cannot believe you remember that, Fred. That I used to, you know, read all these silly magazines. But it's ridiculous. But yes, it does help sometimes to not always read about, you know, the latest trends or latest. It's just sometimes it's good to clear your head and then comes back, you know, the inspiration.
Oh,
and
I completely agree.
Yeah, yeah. And I find right now, since I moved to Bulgaria, I actually experienced four seasons. And I don't know, but spring is just, I love it. I get so much inspiration from spring, especially when the green, the beautiful green leaves comes out. I mean, all my life I live in Venezuela tropics or Florida tropics. I've never seen snow, never seen. And I think that's something that I also get. Right now, spring is coming, and I just feel so, it's just beautiful. It's just very, very nice.
Oh, absolutely. For me, it's fall. I love fall. Yeah,
fall is pretty, too.
Dying things to me are always the thing that gets me, like, creatively going. I mean, like, it won't always be that macabre, but I mean, like, it could, like, I got a story, basically, that I wanted to write, and oddly enough, a children's book and stuff like that, which is very, very far away from what I normally do, just by, like, just a weird story, you know, just watching weird things happen. You know, one thing leads to another. You'll watch this thing die, but then in a couple months you get to see it grow again, you know. So it's interesting what inspires us, isn't it?
Yep.
and where it takes us.
Yeah, there's inspiration from everywhere. But yes, the awards is, I think, one of the awards.com. I like the website a lot. And I think my goal is, like, hopefully one day I can have one website there, be nominated or something at least. I would love to.
Yes, we all aspire to that. Agreed.
I think so, yeah. I think we all should at least try something on our own. Oh, we can make that project for, you know, the pollination for adults and make very cool interactive website or something. I'm not kidding.
Yeah. We can get Morgan Freeman to do something about it. He started beekeeping. He's a beekeeper now. He's got hundreds of thousands of acres, I think, of bees now.
You're right. Yes, you see? We can maybe do, and then we can make this website and put it in there. The website of the day.
I like it. Let's save the planet.
Yeah.
One weed-soaked bee at a time.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Oh, I didn't just. Yeah, well, sorry. Another thing that I forgot was also I checked a lot of Pinterest. Pinterest and Dribbble are two things that I also use to inspire. Pinterest a bit scary because it's a rabbit hole, but or I don't know how you call that correctly, but yeah. But those are
no, that's right.
You start one thing and then you get in a recipe of how to do, I don't know, cookies. I'm like, what? That's not what I went here for.
And now I'm baking.
Yes, exactly. All right, well, but, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we definitely want to thank you for coming on today. It was a real pleasure, and you know, a lot of cool things that you're doing. A lot of fingers in a lot of different pies, and that's something that I think is as an artist that you have to entertain more than one medium in order to stay fulfilled. So, I mean, definitely for you, that's awesome. I'm glad our listeners got to hear it. And thank you very much for coming on.
No, thank you guys for inviting me and thinking of me. Thank you. You guys rock.